Welcome to Now Playing podcast review of Under the Skin.
This has got to be pure hard to explain.
A patron exclusive review chosen by Josh Fisher.
Very charming.
Hosted by Jacob, Arnie, and Stuart.
Well, plenty to talk about as ever.
This podcast is spoiler filled and contains harsh language. Listener discretion is advised.
I won't let that stop us.
We hope you enjoy the show.
So, enjoy yourself anyway, okay?
Today, we're getting Under the Skin, starring Scarlett Johansson, directed by Jonathan Glazer. This is the Now Playing co-host who can always get under your skin, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the host who always shops at night because people wind me up, Jacob.
Hello, May patrons. It's a new month. We just covered Walter Mitty. We're going to knock out another patron pick, this one done by Joshua Fisher. I really want to know, why did Josh want us to cover Under the Skin?
So we could say something positive about Scarlett Johansson after that Black Widow movie?
She was fine in it. It just wasn't very memorable. But he watched this in 2015 or 2016, knew nothing about it. And when he watched it, he knew he wanted us to discuss it. And he thought it was challenging and unnerving and a film that got under his skin in a way very few films do. He wasn't even sure that he'd watch it again. He rewatched it in 2021, and he still doesn't fully understand what he saw.
Fair enough.
Darn, I was hoping he could give me some answers.
Yeah, I had a feeling, sometimes when they pick these obtuse movies, I feel like, explain it to us, and I don't know that we can do that, but we can certainly try.
Yeah, he says he recommends the film, but it has a lot of qualifications, and he said it's not really a fun film, but if you're up for a challenge, he thinks this one's worth checking out, so I guess we're here to see if we agree with him.
Right. And if you want answers, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. There's a book, and it makes complete and total sense. Every motivation is outlined. There's even names for characters. You want to know what's going on in this movie? Pick up the 2000 novel, Under the Skin, not written by Walter Tevis. I lied to you guys. I said, oh, it's done by the guy that wrote The Man Who Fell to Earth. No, I don't know where I got that. It's actually written by Michael Faber, who had a hit a few years later, a bestseller called The Crimson Petal and the White that your mom probably read. But this was his first novel.
You say read the novel if you want answers. I did go to the wiki for the novel and read the plot summary on there because I needed some answers.
That's cheating. It's actually a pretty good book, although nothing like what we're here to discuss.
It's not just sounds and colors and...
It's not a cinematic mood ring. It is actually kind of like a Kurt Vonnegut satire about bureaucracy. We have this alien named Isserly, who disfigures her body. These aliens look like they relate to sheep, so I think that they're definitely four-legged and they seem to have sheep heads. She disfigures her body so she can look like a hot chick driving around the back roads of Scotland to try and pick up really built, muscular men so that she can then, like, she's got this pimped out car that she hits a button, it's got a stinger in the passenger seat, it knocks him out. She can drive him to this farm where her cohorts are, and they will turn him into Vodsel. I love this word, but it's basically we become delicacies for another planet when we get thrown into a modified farming equipment and, you know, they take away all our hair and skin and pump us full of steroids and stuff to make us all fattened, and apparently we're very delicious.
I want to make sure I heard you right. It's a book about sexy, murderous sheep.
The best thing about the novel is the reason why it would be very hard to make a movie out of it. We can't be sure from the prose exactly what these aliens look like, But there is a passage where she's talking to one of her allies named Insel, and they talk about how it's strange that sheep don't talk because they look like they should. And I took that to mean that they, when they're described later as having four legs and fur and all of that, have something to do with deer or sheep or something like that.
So was Michael Faber a farmhand in his earlier life?
No, he's not even a vegetarian, but he wanted to make a point about bureaucracy and the way that we can become desensitized, where anyone can become desensitized to violence in the pursuit of money or delicacies or what have you. This Isserly character is actually a poor alien. She comes here and modifies her body because she has no other options, and it actually, she's got a lot of pressure that they're talking about having her abduct a woman so that it can then use eggs to grow, like, more desirable, more authentically human-looking honey traps for more of their meat, their vodsel later.
So how did that become this movie?
Essentially, beat for beat, it's the same story.
Just with no explanations.
You will see her traveling Scotland and having exchanges with men, and there's always a little passage from the male point of view and what they're experiencing and what they're taking for this. But there, again, there's this whole other story that just gets left out here. We see the seductions in this movie. We never see her basically dealing with this alien that's all about human rights. And the big thrust of the novel is that he goes and frees some of the Vodsel. She has to collect them before the whole operation is busted, before these fleshy, fatty, hairless, once human beings run to a hospital or the police station.
So you're saying the motorcycle man was letting people free?
No, a different deer alien was letting them free, and she and the motorcycle man were trying to collect them. Kind of Blade Runner-ish. But instead of androids, you get, like, a naked John Candy.
Oh, no.
Do androids dream of super sexy sheep?
So, yeah. I mean, entertaining on the page largely because of the way it's written. It's one of those things that, like, it's all about how you tell it, right? Because that sounds really heavy-handed and maybe even kind of stupid. But I really found myself enjoying it. It was a breezy 300 pages, kind of Vonnegut-esque, kind of had a cool vibe. But you could never make it the way that it was on the page. If you did, I imagine it would look as ridiculous as the climax of AI or something like that, where people are just talking too much and it's all these like CGI alien creatures going blah, 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 blah. You don't want that. I fully endorse the idea, if you're going to make this into a movie, go for mood, throw out the narrative.
Oh, they did that.
That's the whole MO of our director, Jonathan Fraser, who was kind of a big deal once upon a time at the turn of the millennium. He had, along with Spike Jonze and Michelle Gondry and Curtis Cunningham, all these up-and-coming music video directors and people that made cool commercials, they had DVDs released of all their work. And he was one of them. He was expected to be a really big deal. His first movie was kind of a modest hit called Sexy Beast. Ever see that one?
I mean, I know it. I know it's Ben Kingsley. I've not seen it. Is it any good?
I remember it being okay. I don't remember it being, I don't know, much of anything. It was a lot of Ray Winstone, like, sunbathing, if that's appealing to you.
Those are the clips I've seen. That's why I'm yet to watch it.
I probably should have gone back. I will say that his second film is as bad a sophomore slump as you can have. Birth?
Never heard of it.
Oh my God. It's for the pedophile in your life. I mean,
oh no.
It literally is about Nicole Kidman convinced that an 8-year-old boy is the reincarnation of her lover, and she's having discussions about how they can make his flaccid penis erect for her. Not kidding.
Oh my.
I remember reading about that film. I have not seen it. I have no desire to see it. It caused a stir.
Yeah, it really was something, but I guess what I would call it is some real artistic douchebaggery, a term, Arnie, you lovingly created when we covered some of those Martin Scorsese movies. This one earns that. It really was pretentious and, I mean, beautiful looking and amazing tracking shots and all of that, but why? Why are you doing this? And the guy didn't work again, at least in the movies, for another decade. But, of course, what he wants to make is the bread and butter of A24, who we've covered a little bit, but wasn't a thing back when this movie got made in 2013. This is their seventh movie, and they hadn't had any hits yet other than Spring Breakers.
And I heard this took a long time to, I don't know, maybe from when the rights were bought, but it was a 10 years and like Brad Pitt was attached at one time. Was that all under A24?
Wow. Brad Pitt, what would he play? I guess if it was more like the novel, he could have played the human rights alien.
Yeah, I imagine that might have been the first draft.
Yeah, we're far from that. I don't know how this movie got made. I don't know what was going on in ScarJo's life that she signed up for this. I don't know why anyone wanted to do this other than Jonathan Fraser, who in the scant bonus material said that he really conceives of things as emotion first, then you create the images, and then you try to connect those images together into something like a story. And that explains a lot about why that book that I read ended up feeling like this movie. It's not just the development of 10 years. It's someone that said, I'm not interested in doing the satire. I want people to feel things.
I can answer a couple of your questions, Jacob. A24 distributed this film but didn't make this film. When this film was finished, it caused a bidding war, and A24 won that bidding war in order to release the film.
I wonder how big that bidding war really was.
Yeah, if A24 was the winner in 2013, it couldn't have been that high. I could have maybe won the bid.
Hey, I've had bidding wars on eBay for $10 items. No, $9.98!
Yeah, this is an $8 million art film that, again, very specialty market. At a time when art movie theaters are going away, 2013, 2014, A24 really is the savior of that. If you want to see an art film, A24 is about the only company that was buying them and making them.
Well, apparently somebody else was, because they had to outbid them.
Who, though? Show me the receipt.
Then there are so many companies at the opening credits that are grants, and one calls itself like a lottery. You could tell that part of the reason this was made in Scotland is they must have really good endowments for the arts.
Yeah, because they don't have studios. I mean, that's why New Zealand, Australia, they all have great grants for the arts.
Mm-hmm.
As for why ScarJo's involved in this, I have her answers and I have my own suppositions. But from what I've read, a lot of people were considered for the lead role. A couple who I really would have liked to have seen in this role, January Jones, is unable to emote, so she actually would have been perfectly cast for this. Olivia Wilde, but according to Gemma Arterton, she was the first choice. The director really wanted her, but she wasn't bankable enough. In order to get some of this financing, they needed a star.
I was going to say, who is that? You're right, not bankable. No idea who that is.
Wasn't she in that last Kingsman movie?
Yeah, she was in The Kingsman and...
Oh, that awful one we just recently reviewed?
She was also in Prince of Persia, Quantum of Solace. So, you know, she's got a steady stream of bad films.
She was Strawberry Fields. She got coated in oil in that James Bond movie. Might be her career highlight.
But by having Scarlett Johansson attached, they were able to get all the money they needed for this. And she'd been talking to him off and on for years about it. But when he finally ended up with a script, which I'm assuming could be mailed with a single stamp, like one page of dialogue is all they wrote, and the rest is just make the shit up. But when she saw that script, she decided to be part of it. Now, a lot of people know this movie just as the ScarJo is Naked movie, so I'll just address that right up top. I have two theories about why ScarJo decided to strip down. Part of it, and she's kind of alluded to this, was the whole fappening where naked pictures of her got out anyway. And this was a way for her to kind of own her own image and her own nudity and get it out there in a way that she has some control over.
I also had read that, you know, if she was going to do nudity, because she knew, like, that's what the movie might become known for, that it had to be really part of the story. And I guess every actress says that it's a part of my character, but it was something on her mind that she's concerned about.
And I think after Black Swan, you know, Natalie Portman wins an Oscar for kind of going to these kinds of artsy extremes. Maybe she saw this as a rebuttal to it.
There's a very big difference, though. Nat never showed nip.
I was wondering if this was a body double or not, but I guess this is her.
The other thing I think, and this is my supposition here, is I have read several actresses talk about doing nude scenes in a movie that they do right before they get pregnant, as kind of a way of immortalizing the body that they had pre-pregnancy, before stretch marks, before tummy tucks are needed, things like that. And it is right after this movie that Scarlett Johansson got pregnant for the first time. She didn't speak to that, but I have read other actresses say it, and the timing makes me think that that might have been some of it as well.
Well, it makes sense. I can understand. Yeah, we don't look the same as we do in our youth. And she's, what, making this movie, it was 10 years ago. She's, what, 30?
30 is the math I had.
And I have to ask, Arnie, have you seen this before? And I'm not going to say to prove out to Scarlett Johansson, but I got to figure, if you had seen this, because this doesn't hit me as an Arnie movie, like, was it because of Johansson? Did that draw get you in?
That draw did not get me in. If I wanted to see that, I would have just Googled, right?
I'm not saying the nudity, I'm saying the actress. I'm saying because she's an actress you enjoy.
Yeah. If it had been Gemma Arterton, you wouldn't have gone to see this.
This got a lot of buzz, especially in the now playing circles when this came out in 2013, 2014. And so it came on my list to watch based upon just what I was reading in the forums when we had them and whatnot. And coming into this review, I really, really thought I'd watched this movie. I now realize I'd watched some of this movie and then probably fell asleep. And I'll just say up top, I had to watch this movie in 3 sessions because I kept falling asleep.
Wow. I had seen this one before as well, but it wasn't because of Scarlett Johansson, but we're going to talk a lot about the imagery, and it was that poster, like when I was going through the thumbnails of whatever streaming app I was using, like it was a striking thumbnail, like that poster. I'm like, okay, and it sounded like an interesting premise, so I checked it out. But all I can tell you, I stayed awake the whole time, Arnie, but if you ask me, hey, what's Under the Skin about? Scarlett Johansson drives around for a couple of hours talking to dudes, and you feel like you have tinnitus the whole time because of the score. Like, that was my memory of it.
I saw it in theaters, and I went because it was getting such good critical notices. This thing was very acclaimed. And again, it shows the schism that can sometimes happen when, like, critics are like, this is the best movie of the year, and then audiences are like, what? Like, this thing globally made $5 million on an $8 million budget. Everyone on the earth that went and paid a ticket, it only made $5 million. So that's a flop. That is just a flat-out failure. Audiences, I would say, hated this. But for fans of cult movies, this was a buzzy film, and I always tend to like those. So I did see it in theaters. I did stay awake, and I haven't seen it since, but was interested in coming back to it, watching it at home. I thought I'd make it extra fun, and I asked my mom to watch it too. I was like, it's a thriller. We'll see how this goes.
I did have my wife sit down because she does not like Scarlett Johansson, doesn't like her as an actor. And so I'm like, it's a Scarlett Johansson movie. And she's like, well, let's see. And kind of a preview, like she sat through the whole film. I'll get into what she had to say, but I sat down with a newbie for this viewing.
I can't imagine watching this movie with my mother.
All right, well, Ernie, give them the plot. Shouldn't take you too long. We'll get into this movie.
An alien comes to Earth and takes the form of a beautiful woman, played by Scarlett Johansson. Aided by a man on a motorcycle, the alien seduces men, luring them back to a house and tricking them into submerging themselves in a black pool. There the men stay until their skin falls off. The longer the alien is on Earth, the more fascinated it becomes with humanity. It tries to eat cake and to have sex, only to realize its anatomy isn't made for those things. It abandons its mission of capturing human males and flees the motorcycle man. In the woods, a lumberjack tries to rape the female-looking alien. The lumberjack tears off part of the alien's human costume. Seeing the obsidian creature underneath the skin, the lumberjack douses it with gasoline and sets it on fire. And the motorcycle man looks out into the wilderness as credits roll.
And if you aren't already thinking 2001, you obviously haven't seen the movie if you're watching these opening images of atonal music crescendoing while, like, dots of light suddenly explode into stars.
The first line of my notes, lights, spaceship, random sounds, eyeball forms. It's very beat poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And I at first thought maybe I was just looking at a light show. And then I thought, am I looking at a spaceship, a space station? Oh, it's the assembly of an eyeball. And it does that trick. I want to say I gave myself to this movie's experience this time. I went into my theater. I didn't take any notes. Just dark theater, me, this movie. And it does that thing where it's like all black, all black, all black. I'm shining a bright light in your eye! That made me wince a little bit.
But do you like it? I mean, again, I think we just need to talk up top. This whole movie is going to be this. It's going to be juxtaposition and match editing and, you know, weird disconnect between what you're watching and jump cuts. Like, entrancing or boring?
I mean, for me, it's entrancing. You say 2001, yeah, I'm right there with you, a movie I love. And if you could get this just right, like this weird atonal music, just visual thing, like it can really suck me in. And this one succeeds at that. You talk about how you're watching the assembly of someone. I see it as like the spaceships have landed and yeah, now it's morphing into someone. I think it's just a very lyrical film where like, yes, all these images, they can mean five or six different things.
I get why 2001 would be a go-to reference, and I can't help but think that 2001 is what the director was deluding himself into thinking he was making here, but 2001 never lost its visual impressiveness. 2001 was a constant engagement of sight and sound, start to finish. And here, that's not entirely what they're going for. That's what this opening scene is going for. That's what this opening scene reminded me of. And I was highly engaged during this opening scene, loving the style and turning on the subtitles, because if the overriding sounds don't get you, those Scottish accents will.
Oh, that's when I had to turn them on. Like, yeah, this opening, it's like, fuh, fuh, fell. Like, I'm like, it's just sounds. It doesn't matter what's being said. But as soon as that first dude starts talking, I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going on now. I don't know how Scarlett Johansson as an alien knows what's going on.
No offense to our Scottish listeners, but I believe your language is one long contraction.
We went through this already with Trainspotting. We did cover those films. There are moments in that film that when it was released in America, they put on subtitles on the screen because they just knew. We think they all sound like Sean Connery. They don't. Sometimes it's just gibberish.
I'm really loving this opening shot, though. I'm loving that he is screwing with your senses by blinding you as the eyes are forming. I liked that the corona of the lights we're seeing becomes the cornea of an eye. I really enjoyed this imagery, and I recommended 2001. It's a film that I had trouble strongly recommending due to lack of coherence of plot, but if this film kept on this opening level the whole time, oh, I would have loved it.
I mean, we do cut to a guy on a motorcycle, so it's keeping that momentum up for me.
Yeah, it feels like the Stargate when he's streaking by. And I mean, again, you're right. We're not in outer space. It won't have the grandiosity of Kubrick's vision, but I do believe and feel, and even in subtext, I feel like they're after very similar aims. And if you're a fan of that 1968 space oddity, then you know whether this movie is for you, I would say, within seconds. If you're really not jiving with this, you can just hit stop, because it's never, ever going to get better.
Disagree. I was very into this film those first seconds.
How is that disagreeing?
You said you know if this film's for you within the first few seconds, and I thought this film was for me in those first few seconds.
Okay, so how long did you last?
When did the eyes close?
Yeah.
The first time the eyes closed, I started the movie a little bit late, around 11 o'clock at night. The eyes closed around 11:45. The next day, I came back completely refreshed, picked it up about 15 minutes earlier than I started, so picked it up at about the half-hour mark. It was about 30 more minutes, and then I was gone into slumber land, and I hadn't even been tired.
That's when you were, like, wide awake.
Yeah, so it's like, and drinking a Mountain Dew. And you know what, though? I'm not going to say that's necessarily a damnation. This film casts a spell. It entranced me.
Yeah, it's a narcotic that it's putting you under may, I mean, clearly is the intent. I mean, but I don't think you're supposed to, like, it's okay if you fall asleep and dream, I suppose. The director's probably okay with it. But yeah, I'm glad you did finally stay awake on your third attempt to see the whole film.
I got to ask, Arnie, are you good with this close-up of the eyeball? Is it just if something's poking it that it triggers you? Because I'm good with this eyeball, but I was wondering how you were doing with it.
Oh, yeah, it's only if disgusting things are happening to an eyeball, including but not limited to pulling up the eyelid or pulling down the lower eyelid, showing me any part of the eyeball that is not normally exposed, I'm out of there. But this, I found myself wondering, is this Scarlett Johansson's eye? Or is this an eye double?
Yeah, we hear vocal exercises. We see this assembly of the eye. And pretty soon we see that this biker is collecting a dead body and throwing it in the back of a panel truck, which is where this ScarJo assembly is happening. She is naked in front of a corpse, and I'm assuming like a body snatcher pod person stealing the identity.
I think if you've read the book, and I read some of the Wikipedia sentences, this movie is going to be a complete Rorschach test as to what the plot is, as to what's going on, what is the mission, who's the motorcycle man. But here's what I took from this opening. This was the previous Hunter. The fact that she's the exact same size as Scarlett Johansson, the shoes fit perfectly, the pants fit perfectly. The fact that she's laying there and tears are coming out of her eyes, they have the same exact shade of hair. I think this is the one who was hunting before, and we're seeing why she cries. We're going through the journey similar to the journey the last Hunter had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it says something about me. I'm like, oh, he lured a prostitute or something and killed her. It's like Terminator. He's got to like find someone the similar size and take their clothes. I'm like, this seems like a very advanced race. I don't know why they got to kill people just to get their clothes, but okay. I guess that's what they're going for.
But he didn't kill anyone. He went to a specific place where this body already was. He went like down a hill and walked back up with the body almost immediately, making me think that he knew this body was there waiting for him.
Well, and we will see later, he knows where to go clean up a site at a beach where some stuff happens. So again, we'll see there's multiple motorcycle guys. There could be multiple Scarlett Johansons out there too, and these are victims of them.
I agree. There could be many like clone kind of ideas going on. I guess the reason why I assume that this was an actual human being is because she's rotting. We will see that this alien ScarJo is looking down at the body, not only sees the tear, but sees an ant in the flesh and like picks it up and inspects it. This is her first encounter with a life form, and I wouldn't assume that ants would want to eat the alien.
I didn't think of rotting. I thought it was just because this was in grass that this had an ant on it. And of course, I know what film I'm watching, so I'm struggling to identify what is the symbolism. This has capital S symbolism. Is it that an ant is as alien to us as a human is to the alien? I ended up deciding an ant is an ant.
My wife had theories like, oh, that ant reminded her like she's an ant in a colony and she wants to break free. And like, yes, what does the ant mean? For me, it feels like the point of view of this film is from the alien. So who knows what's going on? Like, we are watching something alien to us because it's going through beings from another planet's mind. And so it doesn't always make sense. And I'm kind of like that interpretation. Like, we shouldn't understand this all because it's the alien Scarlet Johansson's point of view through everything.
Yeah, all interpretations are valid and welcome. I would say watching it this time, the second time, the first time I was like, I'm not sure what that all meant. The second time, having 10 years off and having read the novel, which isn't really like this movie, but kind of, what I saw was the story of some alien that's learning empathy, that this is her first contact with life, and we'll see in these early scenes, she doesn't have a lot of respect for it. But ultimately, both bugs and people, she'll have some kind of compassion for them. We'll see as we go through.
Yeah, the bug comes back. I thought like she would squish the ant or something, like go for that Blade Runner thing. Like the androids don't appreciate life. They'll squish that bug.
She's clearly not impressed, but for whatever reason, just because it's, you know, artistic, we're in this white void of space.
And if you're here just for the Mr. Skin factor, this is your scene, right? This is the scene. And, you know, you wonder how will it be done. The first time I watched this movie, I wasn't really being highly critical in my mind. Watching it this time, there's certainly no gaze. No male gaze, no female gaze. If anything, maybe an alien gaze. It just is. It's matter of fact. It's neither dimly lit where she's hiding in shadow, nor is it super exposed like porn. It just is highly desexualized nudity.
Yeah, she's got to learn how to be sexy. She's got to go to the mall. We'll see that she leaves this space, gets into the driver's seat, and next thing we know, she's taking an escalator down and walking walking around. And here was a big thing I remember when this movie came out. I was like, are you serious? I saw the movie and I'm like, okay, it was, you know, oddly shot. These are hidden cameras. This is ScarJo walking around with cameras filming people that are just at the mall. And that what I was led to believe was every actor she interacts with is actually a real person. Not quite true.
Yeah, I was surprised to find that out, that a lot of this was guerrilla shot, I guess, that maybe they couldn't get the permits. I don't know. But apparently there's a meme of Scarlett Johansson falling down, and it was taken from when she trips in this movie, and people didn't know that was from a movie because there was no movie cameras around. They're all hidden because they were secretly filming it.
Yeah, it was a paparazzi shot of her falling, and everybody thought she just fell. And that was a really funny meme in 2015. I mean, it was posed with Jaws, it was posed with Jurassic Park, it was posed with everything. But this is where I noticed some seams showing in the filmmaking. You want to talk about 2001, Kubrick would never have the pixelization and the judder that I am noticing in these mall shots. I had to rewind, because when she's coming down that escalator, I'm like, did I see what I thought I did? And yeah, everybody is so blocky. I thought that they were walking off the set of Money for Nothing's music video. And then as she's walking through the mall, there's this judder, not quite a jump cut, but judder of the frame.
What's a judder? I know jitter.
No, judder is a specific term for when digital images don't move smoothly.
Okay.
And it is annoying me because I hate those technical glitches, and I'm watching this at 120 inches.
Maybe that's the problem. You're watching it at 120 inches, because I wouldn't go that far. It's definitely, again, in contrast with that very stylish, well-shot opening, whether that's CGI mixed with practical, whatever it is, when you go to these shots in the mall and driving around, like most of this film is, it feels blurrier, not as sharp. It feels like more grain. It does feel rougher.
I guess, but I mean, as someone that usually does pay a lot of attention to the cinematography, I still think it looks ethereal. I still feel like it feels otherworldly and thus fits within the context of this movie. It doesn't feel like they got an amateur camera and this doesn't look good. I mean, maybe it's not as slick as you like.
It has all the cinematography quality of a TikTok video, and I think what's giving you the ethereal quality is the score that comes with it. But you can't say this is good cinematography when it's a micro cam on her coat.
Again, I think you're watching it real blown up, so maybe having a different experience than us watching it on smaller screens. But to me, it feels like a documentary, and it's kind of cliche, like the alien has to like look at humans and learn about them. I feel like, yeah, this is that same cliche, but it's just got a different vibe because of that score, because it almost looks like a documentary. There's no dialogue really going on except the ambient noise of people talking, but we don't know what's going on in Scarlett Johansson's head.
I don't think that we would know yet that she's a killer.
No.
I'm not sure when we would know. We would notice there's something ominous about what she's doing. Like, once she gets the lipstick on, she's driving around. She's clearly eyeing the men. If there is a gaze here, it's a female gaze, or maybe an alien gaze. She is only seeing men. Men there, men going across the street, old men, young men, every race. That's what she is staring at. And when she tries to approach them, whenever they mention their family or that someone's expecting them, the seatbelt goes back on, the eyes glaze over, and away she goes.
And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the first direction she's looking for is to what I'd assume is an interstate, the M8, or mate. Get it? She's looking for a mate.
Looking at how she is going after these victims, it does feel like there's something being said about men just falling for a beautiful woman and being willing to do whatever. I also feel like there's something about immigration going on. I mean, she's an alien, but it feels like so many of the men she talks to, oh, I'm Czechoslovakian, and like they're from different countries and they're not from the UK.
I don't know if she's relating to that fact yet, though. I think that's her journey in the movie.
One of the things I read about this film was it really came together in editing. That there's a lot of footage of her talking to a lot of people and trying to figure out exactly what the through lines were going to be. But yes, as Stuart said, a lot of these people on the street are real people as compared to actors who then, if they had further scenes, were told, hey, you're in a movie. Do you want to do these other scenes with us? And the thing that I researched and couldn't find anything out about, Stuart, or maybe you did, is this seems incredibly dangerous to have Scarlett Johansson, who I met briefly in New York. She's 5 foot nothing. She weighs 100 nothing and is gorgeous as hell, trying to pick up random guys in Scotland. This seems like unsafe behavior.
I don't know. Maybe it's because of, again, the editing, the footage they decided to go with. A lot of these men, like, actually don't seem that into it. I guess the ones that do get in the car, those are actors they hired. It'd be funny if, like, they offered them the acting position because they got in the car. But hey, you got to do nudity, though.
No, some did. Some got in the car, and then they were offered the acting position.
If you're willing to show your boner, you could be in this movie.
No. I don't think the nude dudes are... Those are actors.
There's a couple, like, the first one gets in the car, and then it just cuts, and she's on the prowl again. Like, we don't know what happens to that first one.
He's just a guy on the street. HBO used to have a show called Taxi Cab Confessions,
yep.
Where they just put, like, a camera in the back of a New York cab, and people would talk about their sex lives, and it was, you know, real cinema verite. Authentic, raw, like, it was a big deal in the 90s when we didn't have so much of that kind of reality programming, and this is kind of what they must have done. Like, let's just take, you know, a candid camera with Scarlett all around. I mean, I think she's safe because there's going to be a crew in the, you know, if not underneath the passenger seat, but like nearby. It's not like she's being sent down dark alleys with no one watching her. I mean, I think something could happen, I suppose, always whenever you engage with the public, and she's a famous celebrity. Maybe she's recognized, maybe she's not. But the men they choose to feature in this movie, yeah, they come off as rather everyday blokes, you know, like that. It kind of works for them that they're non-professional actors. You're right, it is the editing. It is the fact that he gets in the car, he's smiling, I love being a bachelor, and then cut. And we just see that empty passenger seat, that it just, there's something ominous about that.
Ominous and off-putting, because I'm sitting here wondering, did something happen to him? Or do we just not have the footage? I mean, this is a choice to include it at all, but we're never going to have a repeat of that choice to just cut away and not show us anything.
Yeah, because they're building suspense.
Yeah, that's building the mystery. That's the first thing to go, oh, okay, is she a dangerous person? Is she doing something with these men?
This is when you start to formulate, certainly with the music and the way that Scarlett is often not blinking and looking predatory, you are starting to feel like, yes, something bad is happening here. You know, she says she's driving furniture around for her family, and what's in the back seat? Actually, you would already know it's got space and all of that. Like, yeah, I definitely think you should know before we get to her lair that she's killing these guys.
I didn't know if she was killing. I take it that she's an alien the first time I watched this. When you see her in that white room, I'm like, okay, she's from outer space or something. So abducting people, at least.
She ain't E.T. is my point. She's not going to, like, heal your wounds and stuff.
I am suspecting something sinister going on.
The movie that I initially went to with this as my comparative is Life Force.
Oh, no, not that one.
You have a naked woman coming to Earth, luring people in with sex and killing them.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it was even in London. I mean, this is Scotland, but, you know, to Americans, that's the same place. But yeah, clearly when we get the second guy, who I think has to be a professional actor, or again, maybe they just convinced him to sign the release. Go for it. Why not? You're going to show your boner to Scarlett Johansson, Maxim magazine's sexiest woman alive.
Yeah, I know my wife's like, if you get to see her naked, I want erections. I don't care about the quality. I just want quantity erections. So she was cheering on this moment. Like, not just a flaccid penis like you get in so many R-rated movies, but full-on boner.
Yeah, this is used to be an X, right? Like an automatic, like, you can't release this in a movie theater.
You cannot have sexualized penis and get an R rating, according to the MPAA. A flaccid penis may be shown. However,
right.
The moment that penis moves, that's NC-17 level. So this is R rated, isn't it? I mean, I was just stunned that they had that in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But again, yeah, that's what Basic Instinct got in trouble with. It's why we didn't see Michael Douglas' dick.
And he was, like, wearing a fake one.
Exactly. And I, you know, who knows? Maybe these are optical shots and fake erections, and maybe that's how they got around it. I don't know, but it looks fairly convincing. And just kind of a cool optical trick where we see him step through that darkened doorway. We know that he's in a, like a void. You're in outer space or somewhere, dude. But he's just like, oh, the lights are off, and he's stripping off his clothes. And the further he steps, he's sinking more and more into this reflective floor, like a tar pit. I keep thinking thinking about like the La Brea Tar Pits and how they have those mastodons like screaming. It's really like, if you ever go to LA, you just gotta don't go into the museum. It's lame, but like, yeah, just see the tar pit like mastodon.
The visuals here, we're back at the gorgeousness of the opening. The fact that she's walking on this reflective pool and everything's black. So I don't know if the liquid is black or if the liquid is transparent and thus we're just seeing the reflected black. It's just a gorgeous shot, but as she walks along and he submerges.
Again, this is a lyrical film. It is about the imagery, and don't get caught up in the logistics. Like, how is this working? No, it's about the man being hypnotized by the naked woman and walking to his death and into this pool. And like, is this literally what's happening? Maybe, maybe not. But I get so into this vibe. I am as hypnotized as Scarlett's victims are.
Here's the thing. I mean, I think people, like, namely my mom, walk away from this film saying it's so monotonous. It's the same thing over and over. But there's a steady reveal here. Like, I feel like in this one, you see that they go under the floor, but you don't know what happens. In a later one, we're going to see the POV underneath that floor. So I feel like each time, a little bit more information is dribbled out. Maybe you're looking for a banquet and they're giving you a crumb, but I don't feel like any scene repeats the exact same information. There is always something being learned in the details.
But it is so slow that it feels like a repeat of information. It feels like, if you're ever hammering a nail and building a deck, you sometimes hit that nail and yeah, it's gone a little bit further into the wood, but you still got to hit that same hammer several times to get it in completely. And that's where I feel this movie is repetitive and why I think I did fall asleep the first time. I was tired. I'm not going to put blame on the movie, but when she's just driving around talking to these people, having inane conversations, I was awake through this first kill, I guess I'll call it, but it was not too many van trips after that that I went to sleep like a baby in the back seat of a van.
This is the best part of the movie, in my opinion. This stuff is really, I think, genuine suspense. I mean, not terror, not a horror movie, but genuinely, like, I want to know what the F is going on.
I agree. I got that a lot more the second time around. I think I was like your mom, Stuart, the first time. I'm like, okay, this feels like a lot of repetition. I said my memory of this film was Scarlett Johansson just driving around for a couple of hours. Watching it this time, and look, this is one of those capital A art films. And so that's going to turn a lot of people off. But those kind of films, yeah, you usually got to watch more than once. And so watching it this time and really paying attention to the dialogue.
What dialogue?
Well, when she's talking to the guys and picking up on, oh no, oh, you have a family? Okay, I'll talk to you later. Like, just subtle little things like that I didn't really catch the first time because I didn't know what to look for, basically. This time I did. So yeah, I was able to appreciate, it slowly builds, but it does build throughout the film.
I do feel like if you find it intriguing, you're always processing something new. But if you're not feeling it and you don't like the mood ring, then yeah, this is going to feel really samey. And again, turn it off. If you're at this point and you don't like what you're getting, stop.
I guess, what is the hook at this point? We know she's an alien. We know she's capturing people. The movie will never explain why she's capturing people. There's not going to even be an allusion as to what the motive is of this alien.
It's to suck out human meat and turn it into red light, according to this film, at least.
I saw skin float away in the water. I saw lights. You know, and I know that Stuart mentioned in the book we're being eaten by these aliens. I don't think that a clear case for we're being fed upon can be made out of this movie.
But does it? Like, again, to me, this is coming from an alien perspective. This is scary. I'm a human. I'm seeing humans, like, have all their insides sucked out and left as skin rags. Like, that is bad. I don't want that to happen to me. So, like, yeah, whatever the reason is, I wanted to know too, Harney. I went to the Wikipedia to find out what's happening to humans. But for this kind of film, like, I could go with it. I have those questions, but I also like the lights they're showing me in this.
Yeah, I think that it's minimalism. It can be just enough to tease ominous things happening to people. I don't know what happens when someone walks into the floor. And then, like, later when she picks up the short guy at the nightclub and he walks into the floor, we see that perspective of him looking up at her and then looking presumably at the guy, the last guy in there, and watching him, like, turn into just this bag of skin floating around because the rest of his particulate is being sucked into that thin slice of red light. A creative mind will imagine lots of things happening here. A disengaged mind will say, I don't care.
I had lots of theories, but what's the point of the theories if the movie doesn't feel it's narratively worth exploration? I wasn't disengaged because I'm reviewing this for Now Playing, and because Joshua has really put a lot of trust in us to review it, so I never zoned out. I never wasn't an active viewer of this film when my eyes were closed, but I would then rewind and be an active viewer of this film, and yet I found my efforts to be unrewarded by the film.
Yeah, I hear that.
I think if you're looking for logic, you are correct. You will not be rewarded.
I don't know. I think that there's a theme here. I'll just go ahead and say it. She learns to care. She learns to care about things on Earth, that the longer that she stays in a human body, it rubs off on her. When she starts out, she goes to the beach, and she's just thinking meat is coming out of the water. And, oh, I got to go get a big rock and pound his head in because he didn't drown. And, oh, well, yeah, there's a whole family and their dog drowned in the waves, and I'm just going to walk by their screaming infant son as I drag this meat back to my van.
I felt so bad for that dog. Not the people, but the dog.
Yeah, I mean, they threw everything at you, right? Woman, man, dog, child. Any human being is going to have some kind of response to the pain that's happening to this family, but not her. But by the end of this, and I'll point out the little moments where I feel like it's happening, she is learning to care.
We can't just bypass this beach scene, because I feel like this is when it tells you this is a horror film. With that baby crying all alone, my wife, super upset by this. Like,
sure.
If we were in a movie theater, she would have kept it to herself, but because we're watching this at home, like, yelling at the screen how awful it was. And the fact that you see the motorcycle guy go back at night to clean up the scene, and, like, the baby's still there, and that tide's coming in, like, she's like, oh, this is now one of the scariest movies I've seen. This is awful.
He doesn't go back there to clean up all the deaths. He just wants to get the Czech guy's tent and the towel and all of that. He's covering up the person she took. The baby that's lying there, later we'll hear a radio report and say that the wife and kid are still missing. So we know that the Thai did claim this child.
Yeah.
But for the human response, it's the juxtaposition of the fact that I care so much and these quote unquote people on the screen couldn't care less. In fact, we get this weird match cut where we hear more baby crying. Oh, is she feeling guilty? She's sitting in her car. No, she just looks over and there's a kid in the back seat in a car seat and she's just hearing it cry. So they're playing this game about why isn't she bothered by what should be bothering most audience members. And there's something, too, about just seeing human behavior through this lens. It's always the joy of the alien that comes to Earth storyline, right? Is that we can suddenly see ourselves in a maybe, in this case, it feels judgmental, or at least, like, kind of pathetic.
Oh, by the end, it is very judgmental what aliens think about humans. Like, we're awful.
I mean, there is something pathetic about the human mating ritual. I'll just put it out there. Like, when she goes to that nightclub, I'm like, yep, this is really capturing all the silly things we do to try to attract one another. And it is kind of pathetic. I felt like it was tapped into that.
I feel like if this movie had come 6 years later, she could have just sat at home and used Tinder. But yes, she still had to go to the nightclub here and find this guy who went to the nightclub without his friends.
I don't think he has friends. I mean, pick up on it. He's really short and he's hanging in the background and like he's just not getting any love. And here she is. She was looking for him and gosh, she's so pretty and she agrees to a dance and he's still dancing shirtless when he's in that void, doesn't know what's happening to it. Again, you got to look at the details. There's a lot being told to you here. To me, there's a lot of emotional content going on in the coldness and in the calculation.
But isn't it repetitive that all of these guys, because she intentionally picks the ones that have no family, and I'm not just talking about wife and kids, but parents, siblings, people who would go looking for them and thus cause problems for her. To me, this gets a little bit repetitive that everybody she's talking to is a loner or a loser.
I mean, it shows they have a method for their victims.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slasher movie in a sense, but with a different aesthetic.
It is very Hellraiser, the way Julia brought the people back to the house to feed them to Frank. I was kind of getting that, especially when Skin fell off of a person. How could I not think Hellraiser?
Yeah, I mean, but in the imagery, yes. But I just mean in the idea of a horror movie, like a slasher movie, we know that that's a repetitive thing. Like, we're living for it. The difference is, typically, we're rooting for that monster. There's something about those kills that feel satisfying. And here, I mean, I don't know, maybe some people are getting off on this, but I feel like there's much more detachment, and there's much more kind of being aghast at her leading these men into the, well, we finally see it, it's in daylight, it's this country home that the doorway, you go upstairs, and eventually in the back room, that's where the magic happens. In the book, they made a big deal about the fact that the aliens had a much more sophisticated way of communicating than human beings did. And in fact, many of them didn't know how to speak as a human being would. They've kind of solved that problem. I like the way that we have this relationship with the biker that's wordless. They seem to be talking telepathically. There's this long scene where the biker's just going to be like inches away from ScarJo, staring into her eyes. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I'm like, oh, they're talking. They're sharing information.
I took it even maybe a little bit more sinister that this motorcycle man, like, he's like looking in her eyes. I'm like, oh, he's trying to figure out if she's like being sympathetic to humans. Like, is she being changed by her experiences? It felt like much more menacing the way he was looking at her than just a mutual conversation.
I agree. I thought it was an interrogation of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the boss. She definitely has to do what he says. He may have even made her. It's not entirely clear, but you could go with that reading here. And this is where, again, I think that the learned empathy is starting to happen. Like, someone buys her flowers. Oh, that's kind of nice, except my hand's covered in blood. And
I thought that was going to, like, activate some kind of bloodlust or something. Like, they spend so much time with that blood on her flowers.
That's the point, is that, like, we linger on these moments that, like, are ambiguous. What's going to happen? Your mind creates things that don't happen. To me, it's stimulating for an active mind to see minimalism. It's not stimulating when you don't care. And I care. I mean, Arnie, what I'm hearing is by this point, you don't care.
No, I cared up until the end.
Then why are you disengaged and complaining?
Disengaged and complaining are two different things. I'm not disengaged.
Okay, why are you complaining then? Like, what are you not like? Because it sounds like you got problems with it, but you said you're engaged.
You said monotonous. You're saying it's the same thing, and I'm feeling it's hitting the same nail. That, to me, is disengaged.
I'm engaged with its repetitiveness, and that's what is bothering me, though, is it feels like it's not progressing very much. In a capital A art film, I'm getting a sincere lack of artfulness in a lot of the shots and the grain of the film used compared to the glossiness when they're in the pool room. I'm really liking the visual style when we're in the alien world, but when we're just driving around Scotland endlessly, I really feel like this movie doesn't have a good focus.
Again, I call that disengagement. I feel like what we're seeing is her seeing homelessness, babies, like that thing that she left on the beach. Suddenly people are like pushing them around in strollers. She's like, oh, I guess you're supposed to do something with them. You know, she trips, people help her up. Like, she is seeing examples of humanity that are better than just seduction and killing.
Again, with that trip, though, those two men help her up, and then it does that long shot, because I guess this is all guerrilla, so someone's on top of a building filming up, and, like, it looks like those men are following her. Maybe that's foreshadowing for the end, but again, I'm like, oh, something sinister. Like, here's a hope in humanity, we're going to pull it away with, like, this attack. That doesn't happen till later, but I guess maybe that just says my mindset. I don't trust men on a dark street at night.
And I think perhaps some of my mindset is cynicism coming in here that says, by and large, people are good. Individual people are good. Humanity is a cesspool. And so to see somebody just wandering around and discovering how great humanity is doesn't make sense to me.
I don't think it's a great humanity. She's learning empathy is the way I would describe it. She's learning how to care for something else and to recognize other life. That is, it's that minimalist. It's not saying, wow, I just love these human beings and I'm going to stay here. It is, oh, I didn't know that I could have feelings.
You made the mistake of thinking the novel was written by the same guy as The Man Who Fell from Earth. I haven't read that novel, but I love that Bowie film. And like, that feels like, yeah, what does that have to say about humanity? That has a lot. Like, there's a lot of ideas in that film and the way it's shot, like that it expresses and everything. Here, it does feel much more pared down, like much more minimalist, as you're saying, or maybe simple if you don't want to be so charitable.
The big turning point, you got to admit, everything changes once she finally meets Adam Pearson, who is not a man in latex, but actually someone that suffers from, I don't know what it is. I guess it's some kind of tumor?
Yeah, it kind of looks like the Elephant Man. Like, and I had to pause the film and like look this up because I'm like, is that makeup? Do they have the budget for that kind of makeup? But yeah, this is a real gentleman.
Yeah, I'd read that they were looking for somebody who authentically had this, and then he helped write these scenes. I mean, nobody's going to understand his life experience and how he would react better than he would.
Yeah, and so here's a woman that's gone around and every guy is leering and being like, I can't wait to get another one, and maybe they even deserve to die for that reason. But here's a guy that doesn't have any girlfriends, and people don't like him because of the way he looks, and I think that she recognizes that under the skin, many people would be repulsed by her. She is having a moment. Even though she's trying to turn him into meat, and does, she will end up seeing a fly trying to get out. You know, it's buzzing. Think about that ant. There's that fly that's sort of pounding against the door after she's put him under the floor, and she lets him go.
Yeah, she doesn't turn him into meat. You just said she did, but she lets him go.
Well, she let him into that pool. I guess, you know, that swimmer was in there for a while before he turned into meat. You get this long scene where, again, she's looking at her reflection in the mirror. I take it she's looking at herself in her eyes, just like the motorcycle guy was looking in her eyes. And like, she's seeing something different now, like a bit of that empathy or humanization.
A pang of guilt is what we're supposed to see. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. You said that there were other actors considered for this. I think that you might want to have cast them. The problem I'm having with this movie on the second viewing is in the second half of the film, as the alien is supposed to become human, as Sean Young is suddenly supposed to develop romantic feelings and all of that. These actresses, Scarlett Johansson, Sean Young, they're great when they're supposed to be disengaged, but it takes a real actor to suddenly say, oh, watch me do a subtle little thing and you'll see the humanity. I'm not getting it in this performance.
I agree, Stuart. I saw a lot of praise for Scarlett Johansson in this role. To me, look, I'm not an actor, amateur, professional, or anything else, but I feel like I could pull this role off, like sit there and kind of look bored and talk to people casually. Like, I needed something more by the end of this, and I feel like that, like, if I have to find a fault, it's that I just don't really get her character by the end. Like, she's changed, but I don't think I see it in her.
Right. It's entirely on ScarJo.
And here I am thinking she is doing incredible in this movie. She is this movie. She's the only name on the poster. She's the only name I read in the credits. Motorcycle Man, whatever. This is ScarJo to carry this whole thing. And I think she does a good job of turning on a dime, of being engaging and chatty. And then when she wants to turn it off because she finds out the person's brother's down the street, it turns off. And the way that she is examining herself comes across truly alien. Now, I will agree that some of her steps of self-discovery could be emoted a little bit better because she's not going to have the dialogue to rely on in order to sell all of those feelings. But I think she's doing incredible in this movie with a performance that is solid from beginning to end.
Again, I go back to Sean Young. So great in the beginning of Blade Runner. You're like, wow, she really nails what it is to be an android and not know it. And then at the end, you're just like, oh, or any other movie Sean Young has ever been in, you realize, oh, she doesn't have emotional range. And that's the problem. She needs to have emotional range here. ScarJo is good as a seductress, as a predator, as a promising young woman. It's working great. But as a creature that realizes that it can care and has compassion and doesn't want to kill this deformed man, not feeling those moments.
Yeah, good performance. But like you said, Arnie, she is this film. And for this to be a great film, she needed to take it another step up.
Yeah, she's not great. I will say that she's adequate and she does better in the first half than the second one. I feel like the struggle is the reason why you might become disengaged with the second half of this movie is that she's not rising to the challenge of going from killer to compassionate.
And it's the second half of this movie where I became re-engaged. I feel like a lot more happens once she really is taking those steps away from her mission.
Yeah, we see her pull that guy. Well, we don't see her pull the guy from the water, but we have to assume that she's going to come out with him and try to hide him. And that motorcycle dude, like, that is sinister again.
I don't think she tried to hide him. She just opened the door, kind of like let the fly out, you know, like he basically had to go find his way. He'd stumble through the field naked for miles and miles and maybe you'll be fine. She didn't have an enormous amount of compassion, but she didn't want to see him die.
But I assume she realizes the risk she's taking by doing this. And we see the danger she's in, like the motorcycle man. I feel so bad for this guy. Like he finds this victim and like breaks into that car. I'm like, what is he doing? And then pops the trunk open. I'm like, oh no, this is so bad. And then that old woman's watching from the house. Like she's going to get it too. Like, but of course this is a minimalist film and we're not going to see any of that kind of stuff, but I do feel the dread. And so if you're saying this director, it's about emotion and feeling first, then he's achieving something there with me.
Agreed. And again, this is a creature that's not just becoming more human. I think it's becoming more in touch with nature. Like when she sees fog, she recognizes it as her own emotion. Like this is where she's going to walk away from the truck and be like, yes, I feel foggy. I'm going to go and try and, you know, what woman doesn't love chocolate cake? But she's going to gag in this restaurant.
I'm so glad you had an interpretation for that fog scene because I'm like, cut this. Like we need to cut some stuff out of this film. And like, I don't understand why we're watching her stand in the fog so long.
And I doubt if any Hollywood actress takes a bite of chocolate cake on a film without having the spit bucket nearby. The spit bucket just happened to still be on screen.
I love this, though. Again, maybe it's what I'm bringing into it, but for an alien, like, does she even have the biology to swallow this? Is that why she gagged it up? Is it the taste? But it tells you so much, like, yes, I want to be a human. I'm going to go out there. And she can't even, like, eat one of the most delicious things we've made, chocolate cake.
And sex. I mean, it's sex and chocolate.
Is she a Barbie?
Yeah. I mean, she's trying. Again, I think she ultimately connects more with nature. Like, she'll end up running off to the forest, but she does have a romance here towards the end with this guy at the bus stop who, you know, all he has to do is give her a jacket and she's going home with him.
Are they having sex in that castle they go visit or they go back to his house?
No. I think that he, again, first night, he's the gentleman, right? I'm bringing you tea. I'm going to sleep in the other room. I'm going to turn on a heater that looks a lot like that red light from your void and make connections where you will. I'm going to play the radio. And she starts tapping her finger.
Tapping her finger. That was a big scene for me. I'm like, oh, that's good. That like tells you so much.
Yeah, she is starting to feel it. But the way I take it is she's kind of having a panic attack because when he takes her into that castle, she's presuming that he's doing to her what she's done to men.
As they're going down that winding staircase. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as I walk down the staircase, I'm going to be put in some trap and turned into meat. And so she's probably relieved. And again, she's obviously ready for sex when they get back because she realizes not everyone has the motive she does.
I'm guessing she's not like a Barbie down there because he wasn't freaked out. He was just like, why isn't this working?
I couldn't tell if he couldn't get it in. Like, my wife and I were arguing. She's like, my wife's like, no, she's looking at the ejaculate coming out of her now. Like, she went real dirty with it. But, like, there's some kind of inspection going on between her legs.
She takes a lamp and she's just looking like, what's going on? I feel something. And is there something happening? I mean, again, it's hopefully not the reaction most people have after sex. But, you know, I guess it could be a burning sensation. Who knows? STD.
I did take this from the point of view of the guy. I mean, could you imagine if you had a beautiful woman in bed and you're like, oh, I'm having a little trouble getting in. She grabs a lamp, rips off the shade and is now like doing a very clinical gynecological examination in your bedroom. I mean, this could chalk up his worst one-night stand ever.
Yeah, I mean, she's terrible. I mean, like, I don't think it's telling he doesn't run after her, right? She runs out to be with the trees, and they've done this thing twice. Earlier on, they did a superimposition shot where we see all these gyrations of movements on the street, all this nightlife.
Beautiful shot.
Yeah, we see her face sort of appear in this golden haze in the middle of it. Now we're seeing, to me, that I read that as, oh, she's becoming connected with people. Now that she's running off to the forest and we get this superimposition shot that she's laying in, like, literally on top of this giant forest.
That was a weird imposition one. Like, that first one made sense. Like, you're merging all the images of what she's taking in. This felt like, I don't know, a Bjork video or something with her, like, imposed in between the mountain or something.
Well, it definitely is a Bjork video. This movie is made by a music video director who works for Radiohead, Bjork, okay. Massive Attack. He's done all of those. So if you're getting that vibe, it's because he's the guy that did that. But to me, the read is, I'm not going to connect with people anymore. I'm going to connect with nature. It's the birds and the trees and the fact that she ends up burning and ashing up.
I was going to ask, does that mean this is a happy ending?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. In the book, that actually is the ending, is that she wants to become condensation and go up into the clouds. But I don't think she wants to get sexually assaulted, and we get this really graphic logger rape here right at the end, something of a climax.
I didn't rewind because it felt icky to do that. But what was he doing to her? Like, we know she can't be penetrated. And when she wakes up, he's there and his hand is somewhere. But I wasn't quite sure what was up.
He's groping her.
Yeah, I just took it as groping.
Yeah, I don't think about, what page of the Kama Sutra. She's waking up, there's a hill walker shed, basically, where if you're camping around in this forest preserve, how nice that they supply in Scotland places that you can, sleep for free. But yeah, she wakes up because this guy saw her earlier and tried to chat her up and say, is this your first ramble in the woods? Well, now he's trying to have a first ramble in the woods, and she's running. She doesn't want humanity, and she certainly doesn't want this guy. He's not as chivalrous as the last guy, and I think she's just kind of done with people. I think she'd be happy to hang out with grubworms and squirrels at this point, but she's not going to have that chance. He's going to douse her with flames, and he does something to her body because her skin is coming off. It's all ripped up.
Yeah, this is from when he's trying to rip her clothes off and she's struggling, and he either from the brambles on the ground or from his hand, something tears at her skin. And I love that she's hollow there. It's not like V. In V, you tear off your human skin and right underneath, is like a latex mask. There's your lizard face. It's like there's hollowness in here. And inside the hollowness, you can see something is black.
Earlier, when we were in that black void of a room, we did see some all black alien looking humanoid character. And so I guess that's what these aliens look like before they put the skin on. And she starts tearing that off, rips that wig off, and just pulls all that skin off.
And it does kind of look like ScarJo. I mean, the weird thing is that however they did this effect, it really does have a quality of the actress's face, and which I take to mean that something about what she was wearing has become a part of her. Like, she is forever imprinted. If you're right, Arnie, if this is just a series of ScarJos, the reason why the last one was crying was because she had finally been able to find emotion. And I think that that's inevitably what happens if you wear the human skin.
This movie's so sexist, only women can feel emotion.
Well, I'm not.
I'm being facetious.
I know you are. The sequel will have the male, right? We'll do it.
Brad Pitt will come back for that one.
Brad Pitt. There we go. This is his chance.
What got me here was she took off the mask, but then the mask kept moving. It was like there was some strange effect of ScarJo's face in the black alien's lap, still making facial expressions. And then, when you'd look at the alien from the front, it does look like ScarJo's face underneath probably some makeup and a bald cap. But it's her shedding the guise of humanity. I mean, this symbolism is all too clear.
But what that means, less clear. I mean, I think that, yes, it's clear that the alien has been moved, but what the journey has meant, I mean, again, my mom walked away from this going, I don't get it. I think maybe that's even the desired response upon first viewing. What did we just watch? I was looking more forward to the second viewing to see what layers would rise here, because, it's certainly very pretty, but what does it all mean?
It means that when you get burned alive and your molecules go up to the sky, they are reincarnated as snow that comes back down on the camera lens.
Again, it would make more sense if they had worked in the dialogue from the book about the alien's fascination with water and condensation.
That is still a ding I give this one, and I get it. It's an art film. Like, it can mean anything, however you interpret it, but in a movie narrative, when you're releasing it in theaters, you do want a little bit more structure. Like, at least I do. I'll speak for myself. Like, that's always my struggle with Lynch, is I love the artiness, but I want more narrative. I want more of, what is this about? Why did I just spend 2 hours watching this? And even the second time where I appreciated this a lot more and picked up on a lot more, at the end, I'm still kind of what's the point? That humans are crap? trap, or maybe that we should return to nature like she does with the fire. Like, but does that matter with this kind of film? And with this one, at least, it ends up not really mattering what it means, like, more than just the experience for me.
Well, I guess that leaves Jacob Stewart. Did this movie get under your skin? Jacob.
You know, it's funny you brought up minimalism, Stuart, because the first thing after watching it this time, I thought of he's a minimalist, I think postmodern painter, Mark Rothko. If you're familiar with his work, he just paints like two rectangles on a canvas of different colors. And like that is all he does. But they're really big canvases. And I remember going to the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and they had his stuff on display. And it was like that moment in Ferris Bueller. Like I've never had that moment in a museum where like just a work of art hit me for some reason. And I just had to stare at it. Like I sat down and I just stared at his giant rectangles that he painted. Like not a lot of technical skill there, but there was something that struck me emotionally and just pulled me in. That's how this film hits me. Like, what does it mean? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. It is about that vibe, maybe feeling alien and experiencing Earth for the first time. And look, this is an artsy film. So, you know, listening to us, if that's how you feel about that, like if you're going to like that or not, my argument would be, I just saw Roland Emmerich's latest film, Moonfall, where the moon is falling to Earth and it's bad. Like it's bad for Roland Emmerich even. Like, I'm like, is this the state of sci-fi? Like it is a movie that says moon terror. Like people have moon terror and it's still bad. I don't know how he pulled that off, but like, is this the state of sci-fi? Like, is it just superheroes and Iron Man suits and bad Roland Emmerich films? Like, yeah, I like that Isaac Asimov stuff, that really thinky, conceptual type of science fiction. So I would argue that this is worth seeing just for a different flavor of science fiction, if nothing else. But I think it's mesmerizing, the weirdness, the psychedelic colors that you get at times. Like, it's an experience. Does that make a great narrative film? Maybe not, but it's an experience that I think that's worth going through. So I'm going to recommend this.
Stuart.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just up top say, yeah, I recommend the experience because I like psychedelia, because I went to film school and I appreciate people that try to forward film grammar and try to pioneer new ways of telling narrative. And that's obviously what they're trying here. It's an experimental film that is just commercial enough and has ScarJo, so it got a major release, but obviously not made for mass audiences. And yeah, that's enough for me. Trippy visuals, cool sound design, it held me. But is it anything more than an $8 million student film was the question, coming back to it a second time. Again, I had trouble convincing mom or myself, providing a counter argument that it was more than just a naked woman driving around Scotland. In the end, it really does work better as a mood ring than as this story that, again, I see the attempt. I feel like in little moments, we do see a creature learning empathy. And I do feel like that would have been really powerful, has been powerful. I mean, it was kind of the story of 2001 to some degree, or it could be argued that mankind learning how to use technology to further it. I mean, I do feel there is a human story being told amid all of this juxtaposition and weirdness, but I also feel like Jonathan Fraser and ScarJo just aren't quite pulling it off. They're good enough to make a cool lava lamp, not quite good enough to make a masterpiece. And I do feel like this movie aims high and falls far short of it. But I was rarely bored. I think the movie drags in the last 20 minutes. I do think because we're not watching this alien advance as she's supposed to be becoming more human, it's not really interesting to watch ScarJo do those performance bits in the last 30 minutes of the movie. It's going to suffer because of that. But overall, I still found it, the word mesmerizing is a good one, Jacob. I do feel like it's gimmicky, but mesmerizing. And if that sounds like a good time for you, I agree. Sci-fi can appeal to all different kinds of flavors. This is definitely going to be one we don't get that often, and I'm glad I got it here.
And I want to just thank Josh Fraser for picking this movie to review, because it gave me a chance to really consider this movie, which I thought I had seen, but I guaranteed to myself when she was being set on fire and puking up cake, I had not seen those scenes of this film. As for whether or not I recommend it, I'm really torn, because I agree with a lot of what you guys have said in that this is a mood piece. It created a vibe. I enjoyed its vibe for the majority of the film, even if I felt like it held certain notes for too long. The movie feels a little off balance. I mean, if I recommend it, it's not a super strong recommend, clearly. But I also think that sometimes arts for art's sake can become artistic douchebaggery and masturbatory, and did this film cross over into that? Is there any there?
I mean, there's a bunch of boners in this, so yeah, it's masturbatory.
They were never touched by men nor women.
I don't know what was going on in that water when they were just hanging out.
I don't know either, but the balls were blue.
Everything was blue.
It's a question of when he took the book and decided to boil it down to its most basic parts, did the flavor go away with that as well? Did he take it and make it just so abstract that it is a waste of time?
I would say it's a better gimmick than it is a story, but it is both. And to me, the story is just not convincing in the second half.
And to me, the story dragged on too long in the first half. I'm going to go weak not recommend on this. And it's not because it put me to sleep. I blame myself for that, not the movie. I do think this movie had an effect on me, a physiological effect of sleep, but that could actually be seen as a positive that I was reacting to the movie in some way. But in the end, this isn't one I'll ever return to. I won't return to it in so far as watching it as a movie, and I'll probably not even return to it too often in my thoughts. So no, not recommend, but weak not recommend. I could have gone the other way. I could have given it the 2001. It was a nice, fun, trippy vibe recommend.
And it sounds like we all had qualified interpretations of it. I think that's rare. My experience is people either love this movie or hate this movie. Typically, I find people that are going to tell me this thing is brilliant or this thing is dog shit. And I think that's both are way over statements. It wants to be a masterpiece. Occasionally, it hits those notes. But yeah, there's too much artistic merit to call it crap, but I just didn't feel like it succeeded in all the aims. But again, it's an A24 film through and through. It helps define what that studio is going to put out and why it's so different from anything else that any other studio is putting out in 2022.
Yeah, you watch this and it's no surprise they put out a movie about a half lamb, half human baby.
Right, exactly. Ex Machina and The Witch and all the things that would come afterwards pretty shortly. Like, this isn't of the same piece, if not the same quality.
Yeah, there's no surprise to me that this is an A24 film. I didn't realize that going into it, because A24 didn't really mean much to me years ago. But yeah, when I saw that A24 logo, I'm like, oh, I didn't even know they started this early.
And so I guess if you're interested in more Marvel actors doing weird things, we're going to keep feeding you. This Tuesday, we've got the sequel to Doctor Strange. And if you want more crazy, in 2 weeks, we're going to go to the Cuckoo's Nest. We're going to do another patron pick for May. Two of them. And this one's big. Jack Nicholson, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I'm not spoiling anything by saying that's one of my favorite films of all time, and I'm so excited to get a chance to talk about it. So thank you to all of our patrons for your loyal support. It means the world to us. Hopefully you're enjoying a couple of extra bonus shows here. God knows if one patron pick we do isn't your taste, the next one certainly is. Again, the variety we have on these patron shows is second only to the enormity of your support in making this very enjoyable.
Yeah, we're only 2 months away from Adventures in Babysitting. I mean, like, these things, sometimes, like, my head spins jumping from these.
Academy Award-winning film, art house, Adventures in Babysitting.
We cover it all here at Now Playing, and I do appreciate that these patron picks specifically, not only do they show that we have an audience that wants us to hear other things, but it really does allow us to find different flavors than sequels. I do feel like sometimes the most exciting conversations we have are when we cover these patron picks.
So, Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. And now, I just want to go to Tesco's.
Okay. You did that.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
I liked it.
And a special thanks to Josh for his incredible support of the show and for picking Under the Skin for our hosts to review.
Do you want to do it again?
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You uncomfortable?
No, just want to go to Tesco's.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Am I keeping you from something?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
How's that?
Yeah.
No.
I'll get into what she had to say, but I sat down with a newbie for this viewing.
I can't imagine watching this movie with my mother.
That's true. Like, I tried watching Election at the movie theaters with my mom, and there's a lot of sex in the first, like, 5 minutes of that film, and, like, she's like, we need to leave. So this one, oh boy, so many boners.
No.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it was even in London. I mean, this is Scotland, but, you know, to Americans, that's the same place.
Just set upset all our UK listeners.
I mean, I know about it. I saw Braveheart. I know you're mad.
No.
I keep thinking about, like, the La Brea tar pits, and how they have those mastodons, like, screaming. It's really, like, if you ever go to L.A., you just gotta, don't go into the museum, it's lame, but, like, yeah, just see the tar pit, like, mastodon. My heart bleeds for that whole family.
Oh, it's a terribly heartbreaking place to go and see these dying family. I couldn't believe how morbid the tar pits were, or how small.
You bring a picnic basket. You could eat there and look at them drown in tar. It's great. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
She's running. She doesn't want humanity, and she certainly doesn't want this guy. He's not as chivalrous. Why can't I say this word?
Now you've he's got not, me thinking I'm like trying try. To help you, but I can't say I it.
He's not as chivalrous.
No.
2001, A Space Oddity.
No.